sure.
So yeah, I just started reading Dune Messiah, and I'm not sure what to think, but I'm only about 20 pages into it. I started yesterday. But I remembered or I remember when I think you were here when you were here since I saw you from that big COVID gap. You said that you wondered if Dune was a science fiction story, if I'd consider it, or if you questioned whether or not Dune was a science fiction story. And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah,
Why did you say that?
I guess you'd have to define science fiction clearly first and then work with that definition. But it seems like it's definitely fiction, but there's not really any science. So.
Yeah, but there's other science fiction. You know what? I mean, the reason why it kind of what kind of stuck with me is because I think that there is a lot of science, not directly in it, but kind of underneath it, or that is kind of structuring it, which is like anthropology,
Yeah, I think maybe you could say it in a way it is science fiction, but it's kind of like anti-science science fiction, right? It's predicated on a world in which the kind of scientific methodology that we have now is rejected in favor of just like biological adaptation over a tremendous amount of time. And to the extent that it has any classic sci-fi elements in it, it's almost all like that one kind of like midget guy in one of the books who's like the Bentley Laxu guy whose name I think was Tilwith Waff,
I
and
don't
he's
know.
like Mr.
I'm sorry, go on. I don't know anything other than the first Dune book.
Okay, so later on in the series, like second or third book, you're gonna encounter like kind of a more classically sci-fi oriented character that's very definitely a villain. And so I feel like to the extent that like sci-fi doesn't necessarily need to glorify science, but it's almost kind of more of like a cyberpunk vibe where like there's something or like post-cyberpunk future where like technology went horribly wrong and then was widely rejected.
Have you ever read Canticle for Leibowitz?
No, but I remember you talking about it before.
And that was an interesting story. I mean, Dune reminds me a little bit of a Canticle for Leibowitz, not, it just not that there's like a direct correlation or there's anything I really can compare it to other than a sort of vibe, because I read that book, Canticle, like, what is it, whatever, the Leibowitz book. I read that like maybe 7 years ago. I can barely even remember the name, but where the story is about like these people who are, it's like post-apocalyptic, and people are discovering some sort of scientific, maybe scientific theories, or they're discovering the science of the past, which is more developed than that present, because of like some post-apocalyptic war or something. And so they're trying to like redisc they're kind of rediscovering this. And so but it's also kind of deserty, and it also is kind of religious and almost like Middle Ages.
I see.
But I was gonna say something about you like Dune, though.
I liked it when I first read it when I was like in middle school. I'm not entirely sure that I would like it quite as much now, but I need so like if we're gonna do like some podcast episodes about Dune, it's probably like somewhat in the context of considering it as a film adaptation, which I think is a smart idea because then Like if we do things like that, it gives people kind of, and like it, the industry, the film industry, the publishing industry, kind of a reason to latch on to the podcast. So I like the idea of like rereading Dune and also kind of having an element of comparing it to the film and considering how it was adapted and different kind of considerations there.
Well, I think Dune is the movie is better than the book. Not comparing the book to the movie, but comparing the movie to movies and the book to books. I
Yeah,
think I think
Villeneuve is a better director than Herbert was a writer.
and I mean there's like the things that stand out in my memory of Dune is not really necessarily the things that happen or the events, but like the shots and the sounds and the way things that the way things happen, you know, the way what is it, the cinematography, the camera movement, all that blah blah blah. You know, there's a scene in the second one in the very beginning of the movie where like these Harkonnen guards are like sort of searching for, I guess they're searching for, I can't remember what they're exactly searching for. I don't think they're actually searching for Paul, but maybe they are, because I don't remember exactly the first one. Anyway, they're walking through the desert and they hear a thumper and they realize the worm is coming and they float up to the cliff, right? But the way that they move, they float, and how the music kicks in, and the way that the camera moves, it's just very, very, it's very cool. I thought it was very cool. And
Yeah,
I think
all
like,
of Villeneuve's new adaptation films have really interesting use of kind of uncomfortable and disconcerting sound, ambient sound.
and that in the music too. Like, I don't know if it's a didgeridoo or if it's like
Oh,
some sort
yeah.
of Mongolian throat music or what exactly it is.
Yeah.
Like when they go into the Harkonnen, a scene with the Harkonnens on their planet or wherever. And
Yeah, that one's more like throat singing, I think.
I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it really adds like a cool vibe.
Yeah, so I was thinking also, I'll send you some. Yeah, like a document of my ideas about different like kinds of episodes that we could have for this podcast. But I was thinking a good way to go about it might just be to kind of like alternate picking things to discuss. Like, I don't know if we could say one or the other of us pick Dune, but like you can have your pick and we'll both like read that work and prepare some notes on it and then like share notes with each other so that we kind of have an idea of roughly what we're going to talk about. And then it'll be more of like a grounded discussion.
Yeah, I think, but I'm also okay with things being loose too.
Yeah, I don't want it to be like fully scripted. That's just too much of a pain in the ass, but like
because I have to
a
think
little bit of
about.
loose, a bit loose, but with like we each get a little bit of a preview about the kind of things that we would bring up so that we have something to follow up about it.
Kind of like jazz, right? Like
Yeah, why not?
you've got the structure, but then you're gonna to
So
improvise it.
another thing, sorry, just to interject real quick. I really want, if we're gonna do this, I want the sound quality to be like reasonably good. So I would personally, I can see myself after I get a little bit of my Warsaw money coming in, I can get some PVC piping and some of that like egg carton soundproofing material and a decent mic and make a little kind of recording room to have like decent audio quality. And I think that that shouldn't cost too tremendously much.
Yeah, that's something
Did
we could both invest in, but I think that I want to make like start getting the at least a few podcasts going
Yeah, sure.
to justify it. You know, like I remember when I worked on movies with people, you know, and the kid that always had like, I shouldn't say kid, but the like when I was in a filmmaking class and I had like a little Sony, a little Sony camera, and there would be a guy with like a Canon XL something or other, and he was always the guy who had like his parents bought him all the equipment, but like he never really had any ideas, and usually he wasn't very good at working with other people, because he was controlling, and I mean, I'm generalizing from one person I met, but it just seems like the kind of a lesson I've learned is that, you don't really you've got to justify investment, you know. I mean, like you start the work, and then as you're getting deeper, then invest in things rather
Yeah,
than,
that makes sense. That makes sense.
I mean, I've also been that guy too, where I buy things and I realize like I'm not following through, and then it's just like a waste of money, and then it ends up filling up space. Another thing I noticed about Dune, kind of getting back to Dune,
Yeah, sure.
I was listening to a podcast about trad wives. You know trad wives?
Yeah.
So everybody wants one, right? Everybody wants one. The traditional wife, baking bread at home. Anyway,
Well, not
yeah.
every good luck being a traditional husband then.
Well, you just that's easy. Just that's like no effort. Literally, you just like,
It means you gotta like do all the work and like make all the money and you can never
that.
like be anything less than like totally invulnerable figure of masculine authority and all this.
But you get mistresses. And
Very
that's
practical.
what's she gonna do? Divorce you? Anyway. But while I was driving listening to this podcast about trad wives, I was also thinking about Dune and thinking about what I would say about Dune, and it occurred to me how maybe this isn't that deep of an epiphany, but like everything, like if you start thinking about, okay, looking for the patterns in Dune that have to do with marriage, like, okay, I think the most interesting character in Dune is Yua. He's sort of like the Judas of the story, but
Oh, the Chinese doctor.
and but like you can you kind of like it's not like he's betraying. It's like he's less like Judas and more like that Serbian kid that started World War One, where he's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna make this shit happen. We're gonna start this war, and I'll take down everybody just to. Because this guy's fucking with his wife. And then there's the issues surrounding, like, okay, Jessica is the concubine of, what is it, Leto, and they didn't get
Yeah.
married. And then Paul is getting married to the Empress, and Gurney's wife was killed from wife was killed by the Harkonnens, and there's like these all these things. Who are the people who are not married? And Stilgar is married, I think.
Yeah, I forget. I gotta reread this and keep an eye on it, but I am interested to look at like a kind of contemporary framing of like gender in this work, because I have a feeling Herbert was kind of like a man of his time, let's say, in some ways.
Well, but one thing I also like, another connection I made was, anti-homosexual, and not super. I mean, it's not like it's super deep into that, but like how first of all, what's the Harkonnen guy, Count something or other? He's dead.
Vladimir.
Yeah, Vladimir. Oh yeah, very original name. Bad guy named Vlad. Anyway, he's like all into like boys, and it remind and he's a big fat guy who likes food. He's so
And he kind
fat.
of floats around in his with his little like anti-gravity thing and has a bunch of like jewels and stuff. If you reread it, he's definitely like kind of like a mid-50s like pederast stereotype.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, he's kind of like John Wayne Gacy a little bit. I mean, but he reminds me of, have you ever read what's it called? The Maltese Falcon.
No, I didn't really do much noir.
Have you seen
Or
the
is that noir
movie?
even?
Yeah,
No, I never saw the
that would be considered like the noir. You know, that's like the stereotypic noir. It's kind of a boring book, actually. It's kind of like, I don't think it's aged well. I don't think it's as good as Chandler or many other. I don't even think it's as good as Red Harvest, another book by Hammett. But the bad guy there is also like, it is insinuates that he's also gay. Maybe it says, maybe it really, I think it insinuates, but it's very clear that he's gay. So, it kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah.
But my bigger issue is, and maybe we could read it, redo it again, is the writing style. I just think is very not, I don't want to say, it's just, there's no energy. It's not electric. It's just writing for the sake of telling the story. It's like if you,
Yeah.
my mom's cooking, where it's like, okay, here's some steamed vegetables. Here's some boiled chicken with a little bit of salt and a little bit of pepper. Here's a piece of wheat toast, and some white rice, and that's
Don't
dinner.
forget the American cheese.
No, that's too luxurious. That's no, it's just the basics. It's like the on the monk menu, and so that's how I felt, where it's just like there's no atmosphere, there's no mood in the writing.
I remember dipping into like the first couple paragraphs of it and being put off last year, considering it as like a text for my like ninth or 10th graders, because even like usually if you're trying to open a novel, you're going to put some style on your opening paragraphs. And not only were they like, as you said, very plainly written, but also like I consider them kind of like unskillfully written, like a lot of clunky sentences and just awkward phrasing. Like it seemed from a writing standpoint, very amateurish.
No, I mean it's not bad, and I'm really not I'm not like picky, and I'm pretty like open to even bad writing, but it has
Yeah.
no flair or no personality or nothing that I could say I would think that even has a like, okay, there's a book called My Life with the Bush, My Life in the Bush with Ghost. I can't remember the author's name, but he's like an African dude. And the Brian Eno, David Byrne, they made an album called My Life in the Bush with Ghosts. It's pretty good.
I remember that, yeah.
Anyway, it's sort of like this kid is escaping from a war. So it's almost like Alice in Wonderland-ish in that he goes into this like weird world of ghosts and they torture him, I think. Not like in a Inferno sort of way, but it is sort of like Dante's Inferno in the sense where it's like there's not like it's more like a tour through this world.
I see.
And anyway, this African writer, English was his second language, and this was written in the 60s, and you can kind of tell like it was written by a person who was not sophisticated with the English language, but still, it had its charm. It had its sincerity, and it wasn't trying to be super smart, but it did have some artistry to the way the language was used, and I think that's kind of lacking in Dune. And I also think Dune is kind of like slow. Not that slow is bad, but it's like, how long does it take for something to happen? Or how.
Yeah, well, you could say the same thing about the films, really.
The films are beautiful, though.
Yeah, true.
I did fall asleep during the first movie, but that's just my, I mean, if it's not Predator or Die Hard, I'm probably gonna fall asleep pretty easily. And slow is not necessarily bad, but I like, for instance, reading it, I found myself getting distracted all the time, thinking about other things. It was so easy to like, oh shit, I got fucking work I've gotta do, or to think about other things. And a good book, it most or a decent book, at least like a 4-star book. If I were to give Dune a star rating out of 5, I would give it 3 stars. I mean, it's not a
That seems
terrible book,
reasonable.
And if somebody really liked it, I could see how somebody really likes it, in that it is a developed world,
Yeah, very much so.
and there's like politics, and there's things that are in it that you're reading about, and there's kind of like things that are outside it, that kind of are inferred by the text. I didn't read the appendix, or the many appendix about like the Bene Gesserits and like all of that. But like there's clearly like this political, the B Bene Gesserits are like doing something long before this story starts in Arrakis or whatever the planet is. I forget what it's called. And so I forgot what I was getting
Yeah.
at.
Sorry, there's the
Oh, it's a
mangrove
developed
boat
world.
right next.
Huh?
No big deal. Go ahead.
So it's a well-developed world. So I'm not trying to knock it. But then again, it's like, how much do you need to fucking describe this desert to me? Like, how many pages do I need to read about the fucking desert? And you're not adding anything. You've already said this in the previous chapter. The desert is harsh, and the desert is unforgiving, and all of the precious of what preciousness of water. It's like, how many times do you have to like, I feel like you're hammering it again and again and again. Like, it's not needed. You're not adding anything. It's just sort of like filler. It sometimes feels like there's a lot of filler in it. I don't know. Maybe somebody, I'd be interested in somebody making an argument saying, oh no, all of that stuff's important, and explaining why to me, because maybe I'm just dumb.
Maybe it was kind of his attempt at literary style, where he was going for kind of like a Moby Dick thing, where he just got really like out into the weeds with the overly detailed world building and atmospheric stuff about this particular kind of like semantic field that he's inhabiting.
But it doesn't have a feel. It reads more like a, like an instruction on how to visualize, rather than like a, like Melville is, I haven't read Moby Dick in a while, but Melville is a powerful writer. And another thing I noticed about Dune is that Melville's funny, and there's nothing in Dune that's even remotely humorous. Not that it
Not even
has,
a little bit, yeah.
yeah, not, and I think every writer has, maybe it's not directly humorous, but I think good writers have to have some sense of humor,
Well, then again, there might, thinking back, like their religious text is called the Orange Catholic Bible, and like the orange, what, why Orange Catholic? Well, I think it was kind of a joke that orange was the color of like Protestant separatists in throughout European history, and especially in like the violence in Ireland. The idea of an orange Catholic Bible is kind of a bit of a contradiction in terms.
Yeah, or maybe it's just the synthesis of two books. But even if that's the joke, it's not very funny. You know what I mean? Like,
No, certainly not.
it's like, yeah, it's the type of joke you have to explain to somebody. It's and it only like registers as a joke through its like explanation, and not by any like emotional play or humor. But
Yeah.
I'm reading Messiah now. I think Messiah reads a little bit differently in that, it seems like there's a little bit more oomph into the writing. But I'm like in the second chapter, so I'm not deep into it.
I'm not really sure just how much he wrote before Dune, actually.
He wrote the reason why I got into talk reading Dune and why we talked about Dune that night when we were waiting at that duck place on Ghost Street was because I listened to this podcast called American Prestige, and they were talking. There was a guy who was talking about Dune and the politics of Frank Herbert and him being kind of like libertarian and like the sort of libertarian hippie, of the 60s, and so and like him being anyway, so I don't remember all the details of that discussion, but I remember being kind of like, okay, I'll go back to Dune. I didn't realize why they were talking about Dune because the second movie had come out. It just
Oh,
came out, and that's
yeah.
why they were re-releasing this podcast that was originally blocked or locked or whatever, not blocked, but like for paid customers only. Because I watched the first Dune and I liked it, but I wasn't like, okay, I gotta watch the second one. And
We're kind of
so,
starved for film, so
pardon me?
we're kind of starved for film because not everything makes it to Asia.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, there's always the BitTorrents. I mean, that's how I do it.
True.
I don't know if anyway. So, what was I? So yeah. So that's when I went back. I got my book from my bookshelf, and I started reading it. That's. I think I was reading something before that. I had to wait. But anyway, I started reading it because of that. I wonder what I was getting. Oh yes. So one thing that they were talking about was like how this was all he had written stuff that had to do with anthropology of some indigenous tribe in Oregon, and that like the Freemen were kind of a stand-in for that tribe,
Okay.
and that like the what are the worms called? I forget what the sandworms are whales. This was like a tribe that hunted whales,
I see. That's
and
cool.
so yeah, that was I guess he's kind of a libertarian in that, and kind of like one of those hippies that take a rightward turn.
Come to think of like the focus on marital relationships. I remember finishing the series and reading his like the author's afterward note that he had written most of the series while his wife was like slowly dying from cancer or something like that.
Ugh, yeah. I
So
guess
if you get
maybe.
to the end of the ones that are the original ones, look for that note because it's kind of interesting to consider that, I think, in light of some of the thematic stuff that comes up in the work.
Yeah. Well, we can explore Dune a little bit more in the future, and yeah, there's a few maybe there's a few things that we could talk about. Also, we could just talk about. If we're just talking about future podcasts now, drifting away from Dune. We could also talk about, other things or societal things as well, or poetry and so things.
I got like a rough list of possible kind of like kinds of episodes or kind of focuses that we could have on stuff. Like, it would be really cool. Like, I remember you were saying you wanted to focus a little bit on contemporary fiction because you hadn't really been doing that much. And I
Yeah.
was thinking also, like, another cool thing about doing that is that then we can actually have, like, if it gets to the point where we're legitimate enough to justify it, we could have, interview-based episodes because, like,
Yeah.
authors probably are,
Hold on a second. Jawa.
yeah.
Mama's somewhere. Sorry, go on.
Like, consent, like young novelists who are like getting published and like doing interesting things, but trying to, trying to make it as writers, like I don't think that their time is like celebrity level precious. So it probably would be pretty easy to book authors for interviews on even a pretty modest podcast, I would guess.
And or maybe nobody's good. Nobody's good but us. That's how I deep down how I feel. I'm better than everybody, even though that may not necessarily be true. But I think that like there's a quote from Faulkner where he's like talking about like one thing writers need to be is arrogant, and like a part of me feels like I am pretty arrogant, but then another part of me is very insecure too. So I try to like manage the two drives.
I guess they're both important.
Or we could be shitting on a modern book. You know what I mean? Like
Could
the
do.
raw, like I really, I you know, like somebody who, a friend of mine, was like a Chinese lady. Who writes, but she's lived in Ohio, and where our kids play together and stuff like that. And anyway, in our group chat, she sent like some lyrics from Taylor Swift, and she's like, "I don't understand why people are into this, blah blah blah." And I was like, "Well, I'll give Taylor Swift a shot. I'll listen to one of her tracks." So I listened to the track from she's that she sent me about like, you're not Bob Dylan. This isn't the Chelsea Hotel or something like that. Anyway, I listened to it. I was like, "Okay, this is all right song lyrically. It's not that great, but it's not bad." And then I listened to another song off the album, and it was just. I was just like, okay, I know what's wrong with Taylor Swift. It is like there's no subtlety, like you have to like hammer into people's head like what they're supposed to think and feel. There's no you can't leave room for interpretation. And so like maybe people as readers or whatever you want to I guess as readers or listeners in the Taylor Swift case are like too lazy or too incapable of appreciating, figurative language. It's gotta be like very clear, that this is what's going on. They need to be like cattle prodded into like an interpretation, and they can't just like it can't be gentle.
No, also it's something that almost nobody is gonna like sit down and read and think about. It's all just stuff that you listen to on the fly, so it's got to be like kind of impressed upon the ear more than upon the mind.
Yeah, but even like you can listen to like something from like okay, that song "Kiss Me" by that band Repentance and something or other. I don't know. You know
I know the
that
one you're talking.
"Kiss Me." It's like it's very impressionistic. It doesn't like hammer something into your. It doesn't hammer an idea into your head. It just like paints this picture, and you can get the idea without having to be directly told what's going on, like describing like the stars in the sky and like this moment between two people, but it doesn't have to say all of these, like it doesn't have to hammer what's going on, it just it the feeling it, the feeling of the lyrics kind of like take you to where you should be as far as the interpretation.
Yeah, I like this idea of maybe having this kind of thing as like a lead in to poetry based episodes, because then you kind of piggyback on her fame a little bit, get some name recognition or something.
Fuck Taylor Swift. Taylor is
Yeah, it's
Swift,
fine.
a Swift kick in the ass. I'm trying to think of all kinds of stupid little puns. Yeah, and then
Yeah.
also, I mean, reading about writing or even like education, like thinking about how, some people are saying, I feel like I'm Trump right now, but people are saying that, 11th graders are reading on a fourth grade level. That's pretty fucking scary. If that's true. Or if, I mean, and so, I mean, there's other things we could talk about. We could get into politics, but somehow connect it with literature. We could talk about our own writing if we want as well,
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, there's only about a minute left of this Zoom. So yeah, just send me your ideas, and maybe by the end of the weekend, we can kind of come up with a plan for the next episode.
Yeah, sure. I will I'll send you a list right now, 'cause I'm actually we just had dinner. And we're kind of stuck in the rain here next to like a mangrove canal kind of thing. So I have some time, so I'll send you some of the ideas I had in my mind directly.
Okay, that sounds like it could be a Taylor Swift song right there.
All
Okay, well, I'll let you get back to what you gotta do, and we'll catch up next week.
sounds good. Talk to you later.
All right, peace.
Yeah.